My name is Kennedy Taylor. Welcome back to the Ladies Lead Podcast. I'm here in Charleston, South Carolina, with the owner of one of my favorite stores, Maris DeHart, Alden DeHart. How are you doing?
Hi, Kennedy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my goodness. I'm so excited for this.
I'm so excited to be here. We are in her gorgeous store. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your brand and how you started it?
Yeah. So we opened in 2016. So we're going on almost 8 years.
Oh my goodness.
I was 24 when I opened. I partnered with investors. Wouldn't have been possible without that. So they're the Maris side of the business.
Okay.
DeHart is my middle name. So that's how we came up with the name. And we met kind of organically too. Do you want me to go into the real story of everything? So I was managing another store in town, and they were customers. Husband and wife came in. I helped so many people, you know, working in retail. And they're like, we have this amazing location right by the waterfront at 32 Vendue Range. You should come check it out. We love this store. We love the vibe here. Maybe instead of renting it out to someone, we should go into business and start a business.
Wow.
So I'm like, okay, wow, like amazing. Too good to be true, kind of. So I went home from work that day, told my boyfriend at the time, now husband, and he really helped me come up with a business plan. I knew I really wanted a clothing store and a women's boutique. I've been a fashion lover forever. And
you're literally a fashion icon. Just look at your outfit.
Thank you.
Oh my goodness.
Yours too.
Thank you.
So came up with an idea, pitched them, had some dinners and talked about it. And 3 months later, we were open and in business. So it happened really fast. A lot of people want to take a lot of time to plan it to perfection. From my experience, I learned just start. Like, starting is better because you will learn along the way, grow, pivot. We opened and the store was pretty empty. We didn't have a lot of merchandise. But at least open is better than waiting, you know. We heard a lot of feedback from our first customers. I really did also want it to be a gift shop and home because I left the home decor world. So I was still kind of in that world, like design as a whole, not just fashion. And the women really gravitated towards the clothing. So you have to listen to your customer, give the people what they want. We started with one rack of clothing and it was all jewelry and gifts. And now my business is 75% clothing. So,
wow. I really do feel like you have a fashion empire here. If you've ever been to the Charleston location, you'll see that there are two sides, right? One side, it looks like there's more clothing over there, right?
Yes.
And over here, what is this? So
what's cool is with our location, our investors, they have the first floor of this building. And on that side, it's like 1,500 square feet. This side is 500 square feet. So slightly smaller. But it's a fun pop-up shop, like concept store that we can have over here. So we've had lots of different things. This is kind of like our test kitchen. We get to try out different concepts. So over the years, we've rented it to another brand in town, Shop Taxidermy. They're like Python and leather handbags. Then we also had the Showroom Charleston, a gown rental company, be in here for a little bit.
Yeah, I think I saw that actually the first time I came here. Okay.
So it's fun to have this as an option where we can collaborate when it makes sense. And then, you know, if they have some customers in town that are coming to their location, now they're going to come and see Maris DeHart too. So it's a win-win, and our customers get to discover new designers as well. And then we turned it into a jewelry store, a holiday gift shop before.
Wow.
And most currently, it's now Amused by Maris DeHart. And everything's very colorful and amusing. And we kind of really came up with this concept when TikTok blew up with all the colorful clothing and smiley faces and fun things.
Yeah. No, I love it. You know, I'm a big fan of your store. I actually came here my first time in Charleston. So my boyfriend and I don't know. This is my first podcast that I've actually filmed with a ring. We just got engaged.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. But we fell in love in Charleston. So on our third date, I was in Charleston actually watching the Miss North Carolina USA pageant and Miss South Carolina USA, literally in, I think, by the airport. And he was in town for work. And he said, would you want to spend an extra day or so? Let's go to dinner. Let's do everything. I was like, let's do it. But that morning, he wanted me to walk to the pier from the Mills house.
Okay.
And on the walk, I saw your store. And I remember just looking in the window like, oh my goodness, this is my store.
Eye candy, right?
Yeah. And because you do have blazers, you know, I'm a professional woman. I like to be a little spunky as well. And I think you do a great job of combining all of those things. So first of all, thank you. I've been a huge fan and a shopper for years now.
Thank you. When did you come in for the first time? What year was that?
Literally 3 years ago. So 2021 in March.
Okay. So post-pandemic.
Yeah, post-pandemic.
So fun.
Yeah.
I felt like I've known you for longer than that.
I know. But oh my goodness, you've done an incredible
job. Best friends
job.
On Instagram.
Yes, you've done an incredible job with your store.
Thank you.
But speaking of COVID, how did you pivot during that time?
I feel like whenever you start a business, you have to be prepared to pivot constantly. Mm-hmm. And the first few years we were opened, we had a hurricane every year. So boarding up all of our windows, and we have a lot of windows. So having to move the merchandise and board up for that and pivot with when you're closed and you don't have the sales coming in because of a hurricane, like a storm, you're closed for a week. Then it snowed here and all downtown was icy. It never snows in Charleston.
Wow.
So we were closed for like 2 weeks during that. So when the pandemic came around, March, like, didn't even feel real. And I mean, it didn't feel real for a lot of business owners, probably. But I remember moving the racks away from the window because who knows how long we were going to be closed. So I didn't want our clothing to get sun damaged. Mm-hmm. And it brought me back to prepping for hurricanes. So you just always have to be ready for something to happen. And we were very fortunate, though, that Charleston never shut down for a long time. Businesses were allowed to go back, I believe, 4 weeks after shutting down. So everyone's like, oh, what do you do for your, did you learn how to make bread? Like, did you have a great break? And I'm like, break? I only had 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Most people had 6 months, you know? So, sorry.
No, grab some water. I'll grab some water, too. We have these martini glasses.
Cheers. Every Saturday, we do Sip and Shop Saturday in store from 12 to 4, and we serve Prosecco.
Oh,
so bubbly has kind of become just a part of our branding.
Yes.
So drinking water out of a champagne glass is fitting for us. So the pandemic, it was hard to lay off staff and then basically start fresh. But then 2021 and 2022... the business numbers were just booming. It was wild, and for a lot of businesses that happened too, because the world was ready to spend after not spending and have fun and travel. And more people were traveling domestically because they still couldn't leave the country. Mm-hmm. So Charleston really became a destination, even more so than it is already, for families to come. So just an influx of foot traffic. So
good.
In a weird way, it really helped my business. Mm-hmm. And now we're kind of tracking, you know, it's an election year, so you always have to be smart with your business and more conservative with that. Changes the world finances and trickles down to even a clothing store and fashion and what women are deciding on a day to day and what they're buying too. So we're kind of
going. That's a great point. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to be as risky. Mm-hmm. And also as risky in your fashion choices too. So right now I'm going to pivot away from the pandemic a little bit conversation into, I just love talking about fashion.
Yeah.
So right now it was just, New York Fashion Week, and they were showing what's in for fall winter of this year, mm-hmm. which is around November, you know, election time. And like a dark gray is having a moment.
Really?
And for me, that is hard.
Like a charcoal?
Yes.
Okay.
Or like in just any tone of gray. And I'm like, I'm just a color person. Like, I do love black. It goes with everything. It's slimming. It's a great color. It's a part of our branding, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm nervous for how quiet luxury is coming in, so really simple. Mm. There's also the clean girl aesthetic right now, so very simple again.
Yes.
And Maris Dehart, we just love our statement pieces and our fun pieces. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but everyone always has a birthday to celebrate every year.
Right.
They have fun things, too, to celebrate. So I don't want to go too far away from our core. Mm-hmm. But I am bringing in some more simple things, and I might even change Amused a little bit. This is a little sneak peek of what's to come for fall winter. I'm thinking about getting rid of this concept and having this be our shoe and handbag store, and maybe even having some designer luxury resale.
Ooh.
Handbags.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
So we're like elevating a little bit and trying that out. Yeah. I'm very passionate about vintage fashion too. So if it segued into like us having some really great vintage jewelry or designer vintage, that's kind of where I want to go next.
No, you're right. And thinking about the clean girl aesthetic, because you're right, it is very big. I think the outfit I'm wearing now is very much a clean girl vibe, but then I have this beautiful Maris Dehart statement.
I had to adorn you with some Maris Dehart. Yeah.
So and I love this. Even with that aesthetic, there's always a place for your, you know, added flavor.
Thank you. Thank you. I also am passionate about, because of our investors, like, entrusting me at 24 years old and giving me an opportunity like this, I want to pass on that opportunity to other female business owners and makers and creatives and designers. So anytime I meet somebody local who has a jewelry brand, I'm like, hey, come by, do a pop-up shop. Like, I'm not going to charge. I'm not going to take any. Like, just come in. I want to support you. And then I build really great relationships with these designers. And it's rewarding for me, too, because I love to share what I've learned over the years. I didn't always have a go-to role model. Luckily, my mom has been amazing. She was our store manager the first 4 years we were opened. She's been in retail my whole life, or her whole life, sorry, my whole life, too. And she really taught me about fashion from a young age. Like, every time she would be getting dressed, like, she'd give, like, oh, you know what, this is what I used to wear in the 70s, but it's back again. And she really taught me about all the different decades of fashion. So I really was interested in it in a young age, and it was fun to have her a part of our store when we first were opening. So I'm sorry. Oh, my role model. So, but she hasn't had a store before. She's been a store manager and worked for bigger companies like Macy's, Bloomingdale's, Chico's, like stuff like that. So
it's probably really helpful to have her here with you.
Oh, totally. But just on the business side of things, I didn't have someone who I could talk to about, you know, another boutique owner. So I've really, like, learned to read a lot of books of other designers and stores who have written books and had role models from afar.
Like, oh, it's amazing that you had your mom to support you. I'm sure that was very helpful. And aside from her, who do you look to as a business or maybe fashion icon or role model?
I really love what Diane von Furstenberg did in the 70s. She created the wrap dress.
Yes.
So okay. Iconic, right? And in her older age, she's really taken time to write books and mentor younger women in fashion. And she started an initiative called In Charge, and kind of like Ladies Who Lead, like empowering women to share advice, like be the woman you want to be, how to be confident and take charge and all of that. And
I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, it's a really cool thing. So you should look into it. So I really look to women who have done things before I have, so I can take little snippets of what they've learned and how to apply it to what I need.
Good. Wait, so tell us a little bit about where you're from and how you got into fashion.
So I grew up in the tri-state area, so New York, New Jersey, Connecticut.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of people think I'm a Southern girl.
Yeah, I just assumed because we're
blonde and bubbly and I'm in Charleston.
Fun. Well, I'm from D.C., so I'm very familiar with going up to New York and New Jersey, and fashion is next level up there.
Yes.
So that makes sense.
I loved going into the city from a young age. My aunt lived there, and so my mother's sister was in fashion and went to FIT, Fashion Institute of Technology in New York. And she worked for Ralph Lauren, and she did sketches, and she worked in the city in the 80s. So it was, it's always fun to hear her stories of how they used to do things, too. She would hand draw, have to go to a Xerox machine, which was like cutting-edge technology, and make hundreds of copies and put them in envelopes and send them to people that work for Ralph within the company. And now you can just send an email, and you can draw on your computer on CAD. So it's really changed over the years. But listening to my mom and my aunt's stories and having them show me New York, you know, learning about the iconic windows at Saks Fifth Avenue and Bergdorf Goodman, getting to shop in all these places. My aunt also had a clothing store or a gift boutique bakery restaurant in Connecticut.
Ooh.
And we lived above it because my mom managed it. So she's always helping us out. It was when I was in sixth and seventh grade, so I would leave school and then help my mom in the boutique and, like, actually ring people up and run Amex cards, and people would be like, can she be doing this? So I've always been mature for my age, I think. And also be... I've been told it many times. And I really think that by being in those scenarios, like, I got to go on a buying trip with my aunt in New York.
Wow.
So I went to a showroom building, and I got to ride the elevator, and you get off, and you see all these little, smaller showrooms. It's like a trade show. Wow. I go to market now, a part of my job. But you get to place orders at these shows, and you get it for your boutique, like, 6 months later.
Wow.
So to see that that was even a career, and being a buyer was a career at the age of 12, was kind of always in the back of my head, like, that seems fun.
No, I watched Devil Wears Prada last night, so of course I'm thinking of that scene where they're looking at the blue sweaters, I believe. You know, is that kind of what it's like?
Totally, and that is so funny you brought that up, because so New York Fashion Week was recently. Fashion Week is always the week before Market Week, because they show the trends, and then the buyers go to market the next week to actually pick it out. So we were at market in New York, and I have a new assistant buyer that I'm training, and our photographer came along. He's been working with us for 5 years, so he's more of a friend too. So he was in awe, like, seeing how the process works. Yes. And also him being a male versus, like, us females. We, every different little brand we went to, it kept coming up where we were like, do we order the diamond necklace with four prongs or three prongs? Like, it's so similar but so different. Or we would be like, do we get the blue shoe in a flat or a chunky heel? Like, things that are very similar can actually be very different.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, from what you're picking in your closet to get dressed, like, a blazer isn't a blazer always. Yeah. Like, I'm wearing one with sleeves and pink, and you have a very beautiful version. Yeah, a cape blazer.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And I will say, too, because if you're doing that, does that mean you're not designing as well, or do you do both here?
Correct. Buying? Okay. So I went to LIM College in New York, Laboratory Institute of Merchandising, and it's more of the business side of fashion, where FIT and Parsons, it's very creative. So it's more, they do have business there as well, but it's where you take sewing classes and design classes and learn all of that. I was never interested in, like, actually learning how to make garments. Like, I'm really, I do think I have a creative eye and also a business side to me. So I went to LIM with aspirations of becoming a stylist or a buyer or a visual merchandiser, where you do window display and displays for stores. Right now with Maristy Hart, we have 200 different brands that I'm more of a curator. Like, a buyer is kind of similar to a curator, where you go to market, you see multiple brands, and you select styles that then create a collection for your store and tell a story in your store. So that's why I admire makers and designers so much, because without them, I wouldn't have a business. Like, I love promoting their products in my store and talking about them and sharing their story too, because it's such an art being able to design something and make something. So I one day would love to have my own line. That's why the store is named Maris DeHart, not Alden DeHart. You have to save your name in life. I don't know if you ever heard about Kate Spade or Bobby Brown makeup.
What happened?
I just love that, you know, I'm opening a store at 24 and I'm thinking, like, you know, because of them, don't give up your full name. Yeah. They started their business with their name with investors. And then when they were exiting, like, they couldn't have their own name back.
Wow.
Yeah. So even though they didn't own it anymore or work within the company, so Kate Spade branched out and made Frances Valentine, had to come up with a new name. And then Bobby Brown, a famous makeup artist, just came out with a new brand called Just Bobby. So that was allowed. So anyway,
that's frustrating.
Thinking big.
Yeah.
Who knows if we'll get there, but
yeah, you will.
You have to have that vision.
Are you kidding? You're going to get there. You're going to get there.
But right now, I'm not even trying to do design or anything. I believe, too, that you can dream big and have really big goals, but you don't need everything all at once. Mm-hmm. Like, you can learn from, definitely every year, always be learning something new. And I try to put myself in experiences where, even though I'm not in school anymore, I can still learn by doing. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm just in the, like, sponge soaking up era. Good. And one day I'll be reaching out to some designers and asking them to coffee and being like, I would love to hear your story.
Yeah.
Any advice? Because that is a scary to me. Mm-hmm. Career when you have to go to communicate with different factories internationally, invest a lot of money up front to have your brand produced, and you are ordering very large quantities. So right now when we go to market, we can order 6 of an item and bring it in, like 2 smalls, 2 mediums, 2 large. So it's not a huge risk there. Versus, like, having to have 100 size smalls that you have to, like, truly believe in and sell. So
yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I appreciate your transparency with that, because I'm sure it's hard for all women business owners to figure out what exactly to order, right?
Yeah.
And how much.
Yeah.
And I'm sure with the 6 items, they probably sell out really fast, don't they?
Yes. Yeah. It's fun, too. Like, sometimes I know, like, ooh, this one's going to be a winner. Let's get, you know, you can get multiples of 6. So let's get 18 of this. And other times I sometimes get 18 and it doesn't really hit. And that's why every store has a sale rack. So I can admit that not everyone's a winner. Yeah. But normally when I'm at market, sometimes the people I'm there with, they're like, ooh, crazy. That's crazy. Like, no. And the crazy ones are what get people in the door.
Yeah.
Because we're known for our statement pieces. You know, we definitely have a lot of basics and great, like, core elevated basics is what we call it. So we have the fundamentals of building your wardrobe. When you sell a statement piece, you also need a more simple top to go underneath it.
Right.
A basic pair of denim. So we have all of that as well. Mm-hmm. But what gets people to pull the trigger on buying is something that they feel they're not going to find it again. And it's something you don't see everywhere.
Definitely works on me. I spend a lot of money in Charleston because of that. I feel like I'll never see it again. So why Charleston? How did you get down here?
So I actually dropped out of LAM within a year. I loved the opportunity of being at that school. The campus, not really a campus, it was like a townhouse, a very chic New York townhouse, right off of Fifth Avenue, right next to Saks. Wow. So FIT is in the garment district in like on like 28th.
Yeah, yeah.
And LAM was up, I think, on like 52nd. And I just loved that, like, my campus was Fifth Avenue of New York. And we did have great opportunities with that school with different speakers coming. Like, I got to see Anna Wintour speak, Zach Posen, some really big names in the industry. And we always got amazing internship emails. So I could apply, and I was just learning more by interning and actually doing and working. So a part of LAM is your freshman year, they have you do, it's called Work Project. and you don't have any classes from end of October to mid-January, and your credits are getting a job and working in retail.
Oh, wow.
In the city. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
So my first job interview ever, well, no, I worked at a boutique in high school, but like a professional job interview was the top floor of Saks, and it was a little intimidating.
Oh my goodness.
Everyone else in the HR area, they were like in their 50s, like seasoned retail employees that have probably a client book by then. So didn't work out there. Then I walked into Henry Bendel. They are, or were, they're now the whole brand folded.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So their tagline, it was like the ultimate girls playground. Mm-hmm. Really fun, colorful things, statement pieces there. So it really drew me in. And I interviewed with them, got the position, and
wow.
It was amazing.
You must have been a baby, right?
Yeah, I was 18.
Oh, my goodness.
They hire 50 different interns, and, I mean, the store was, like, five floors, so you could work in the basement with, like, shipping and receiving. You could work on the sales floor with, like, stocking. Like, there's so many different jobs that go into a big department store like that. And I was very lucky that the general store manager at the time was walking past when I was going into my interview, and she was like, it must have been, I think, maybe what I was wearing. So, advice, dress for the part you want.
Yeah.
And I also bought a Henry Bendel bangle before my interview. Mm. So, like, when you're wearing something from that place, you're already showing them that you are a fan of their brand.
Right, and that's how you'll show up to work every day.
For sure. So I interviewed with her, and she was like, I'm looking for one assistant to help me with everything. Mm-hmm. And I got it. So I had a little office.
New York?
in Bendel's.
Wow. Yeah.
One of the beauty managers left, and they had like this little, it was like a closet size, but it was still,
it's,
I felt
an office.
Yeah, they gave me a computer, and it was right before they, what year? It was 2010. And they were still running the website out of the store, and they needed somebody, like a personal shopper concierge from all the inquiries coming in on the website. So the name Henry Bendel, I mean, people knew it, and they knew it internationally. So sometimes there would be people from Italy reaching out, or the Middle East, like, wanting things. So it was fun to get to communicate in that job and send photos and shop for these people. Some, like, celebrities reached out for things, so I got to help them. Yeah, it was
very,
very
cool.
Fun.
Okay. This was, like, before we had AI chats, right? That was...
For sure. Like, I was the human on the other side when they're like, ask a question.
Wow. I always wondered if those were real people back then.
Yeah.
Now they're certainly not. But, wow, that's very cool.
And the internship ended, and then I was like, I don't want to go back to school. I really love Bendel's. Like, I love being here. And I talked to the store manager, who I was her assistant, and I couldn't keep doing that job because they were moving the website operations to Ohio. So then the only position they had to offer was like a normal sales position, and it was commission based. I got to work on the second floor in the accessories. I also worked in the hair accessory department. Think Gossip Girl time, Blair Waldorf with headbands.
Wow, yes.
They were all the rage then.
Yeah.
I've helped Sarah Jessica Parker.
Wow.
And some notable celebrities coming through for just shopping in New York. So just, it was a fun experience. I loved all my coworkers. I loved Bendel's because every year they were known for having a designer go-see. That's what they called it. And a line would form around the store. All the Bendel buyers would be lined up, and makers could show their product to the buyers. Once you were selected, they didn't buy your product right away. They would invite you in to do a pop-up shop. So we were always having different new designers coming in, and we were selling their products. And I got to talk to makers of different jewelry brands, headband brands. So it really helped with, when I opened Maristy Hart, to know that I want to host people in here for pop-ups. And, you know, talking to the designer and talking to the maker is really cool and special.
Yeah. That is very cool.
So I was at Bendel's for 3 years, and I went from being there from 18. I was 21. I kind of got that 3 year itch that some people do in careers. Sometimes it's like 3 to 5 years. You're like, maybe I should be looking for something else, add more to the resume, try something new, a new challenge. So I was interviewing a lot of places around New York. I really wanted to work at Alice and Olivia. I was so crushed when I didn't get it. I went through like 3 rounds of interviews. I even had an in-store interview where you have to be on the sales floor and they watch you and how you interact with clients. And it was on Madison Avenue. So, you know, very like the Upper East Side in New York. And Alice and Olivia, even though it's a big designer brand, it's a really fun brand too. So I think that's at my core. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to have fun with fashion and life in general. So I thought it aligned with who I was and my experience from Henri Bendel as well. And I was so crushed that I didn't get it. But looking back, now I'm so grateful, because if I did get that job, I would have never moved to Charleston.
Yeah.
You know? So everything happens for a reason. I got a position with Escada.
Okay.
They're like a big brand too, but kind of not as known. Like, their heyday was like the 80s, 90s. So I called my aunt, who worked in New York in the 80s and 90s, and I needed her advice. I was on vacation in Arizona. My boyfriend at the time I was seeing, and I called her for advice if I should take the Escada job. And she said, you know what you should do? You should just move to Charleston. You should just move in with me. She moved to Charleston 8 years before then from Connecticut. So I'm like, I've never even thought of that. I only came to visit here once when I was 18, after graduating high school. And she's like, and I was like, when? She's like, as soon as possible, because it's end of August. All of the college age kids are going to be looking for retail positions. Mm-hmm. So you need to come down here and get it before there's no jobs open. So then I called my mom and I'm like, so Debbie said I should move to Charleston. And she's like, what? And I flew home from Arizona, unpacked a suitcase, repacked a suitcase, and one day later, I was in Charleston.
Wow.
You can take risks when you're young. I was 21. Mm-hmm. And you also can when it's, like, a safe risk. Because I'm moving, like, I wasn't just moving here and looking for an apartment and not knowing anybody. Like, I moved in with my aunt. It was a beautiful house near the Battery. I set up my room in her front dining room and her front living, her formal living room. So it turned into like my little studio space. I loved living there.
Yeah.
And I did move here with no job and I didn't know any friends either. Mm-hmm. So it was exciting, I remember, to give my resume all up and down King Street. I actually got a job with Juicy Couture. They've folded too, but they were another fun brand. Mm-hmm. I was an assistant manager there until actually the entire company folded. So I was only there for like 6 months.
Oh,
and then we got
goodness.
A severance package retail is an ever-changing thing. And when trends change, sometimes a brand as a whole then has to close too, because no one was wearing Juicy Couture track suits.
I loved them, though.
They were in 2004, and I worked there in 2013.
Aww.
They were trying to do more clothing, like regular clothing, and they had great fits, and I remember loving their stretchy blazers, and they had, like, stretchy, skinny jeans that were so comfortable, but, like, it just, once you're known for a tracksuit, that's what people still thought it was. So everywhere I worked, though, I've picked up knowledge, and I've learned things along the way. Mm-hmm. So after Juicy Couture, I then was headhunted by Michael Kors. They were opening a store on King Street, and I became an assistant manager there. So I got a lot of experience being a part of a closing store and then being a part of an opening team that really helped prep me for Maristy Hart later down the road, too. In between my retail positions, I knew I didn't want to be in retail. Like, that wasn't my full career. It was my job at the time, you know, to make money. But I was always looking for more and for more of an entrepreneurial role. And I didn't even know what that would be. Mm-hmm. It's not like I dreamed, like, ooh, I would love a clothing store. Like, I just wanted to be a woman who was in a leadership role, either for someone else's brand or, you know, my own brand or my own company. So I had a moment where I found a scout guide, a guidebook that is in multiple cities, and they feature ads for businesses. And it's a beautiful book. Every year the cover is a different color. They're kind of like a collector item. And it's different than a normal magazine because they're styling and producing beautiful ads for the business. And it's cool too because there were so many women in the ads. It was a sense, I think, because women are just more into how things look and design. They were intrigued with a ad in the form of a beautiful book, a coffee table book. I wish I had one here to show you. And flipping through, seeing all these, like, a real estate agent, just different jobs. Also boutique owners were in there. I was like, I just want to be that woman. Like, I don't know which direction I'll go, but I know I want to be, like, you know, a self-starting business. So I then created a social media company when I was 21 to do on the side of my retail positions. And I met my now husband 10 years ago. Right when I first moved to Charleston, I met him because he works in fashion as well. Menswear, though. So I was like, you know, you are great at social media. Would you want to join me in this endeavor? So we created an LLC and a joint business bank account, like 1 year into the relationship. When I was 21, he was 25. And it was really fun. We got to work with different businesses. I practiced, like, pitching to people, and we had an event service that we represented. We had a boutique we represented. We represented a restaurant as well. And it was right when Instagram was really taking off with more photos versus reels and all the things that go with social media now. It was still so new. So us having a fashion background and working on photo shoots for styling and then also posting to promote the brands that we were working for, we kind of put that together and we created Rutledge Social. And that was like my first taste of being your own boss. And I really loved it. So then I walked, like, Charleston is just so charming, and everyone's so friendly here, too. So walking around and walking into businesses and introducing yourself to whoever's working or the owner. A lot of the owners are working in their store. I'm always at Mercy Heart. Come say hi. And I walked into a home decor store. The brand is Rochambeau. And Anne Yancey is the designer. And she created chandeliers that were hand-beaded and wrapped with, like, jute and different strings. And it really became a nationwide huge brand, but made here in Charleston. And she lived here on Sullivan's Island. So I was like, I love your store. So chic. Do you need help with social media? So she hired us to actually, she didn't need the day-to-day posting, but to do their grand opening party. So then we got to dabble in even events. Loved it. Had so much fun. She then needed somebody in the store and offered, like, hey, do you want to work on Rutledge Social, like, from my store, like, as a free office space, but you need to be able to say hi to customers that walk in? And then me, with my retail background and sales and business side, I'm like, once I started being in her space, I'm like, I really think we could turn this into something more than just me saying, like, hello. So created a full POS system for her. I think she had like a cash box and a calculator at the time because she is a full creative, and also was worked so successful on the wholesale side of things. And retail is a different beast because wholesale, you're working business to business, B2B, and having a storefront, you're B2C. You're like business to customer and consumer. So I ended up then kind of putting Rutledge Social on the back burner. I left Michael Kors, and I then became the retail manager for Rochambeau. And she was on Broad Street, which is right around the corner from now Marist Hart. And she then, Charleston Real Estate is tricky. They were selling the building, so she had to find a new spot really quick. She found a great location on Upper King Street. And I got to fully, like, design a cash wrap and a shelf to work with the builder. And I oversaw the store being painted and completely, like, signage going in.
You learned a ton there.
So much. You know, even calling Comcast and getting the internet set up. So it was very a crash course in how to open a store quick. So leaving her location on Broad Street, she opened on King Street, like, only 2 months later. And then I ended up meeting the customers that walked in that are now our investors for Marist Hart in that store. So, and I told you, too, the quick turnaround for opening Marist Hart. So after having the experience of closing down Juicy, opening a Michael Kors, closing down Rochambeau, and opening another Rochambeau, it really gave me more confidence to turn around and do this quick and open a business at 24.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about social media, because you mentioned you had that company. And I will say your branding is beautiful. It's like very consistent, and it especially shows on your social media. So how did that help you to build your brand?
Well, I will say we've always done it in-house. A lot of boutiques will even post images that they get from the designer or even like a Pinterest image. From day one, I was like, if we're posting it, I want to be the one styling that image, or like it was a new image that we created. So I've always worked with photographers. When we first opened for 2 years, we worked with a friend. I love my photographer friends. They're so creative. So Terrence, bestie photographer. Then we started working with Jesse Volk. He went to College of Charleston, and that's when he started shooting for us. And then he moved to LA now. And he is shooting some really cool celebrities and models and doing it. And
good for you, Jesse.
Yes, following his dreams. And he still comes to Charleston once a month to do our photos, too. And he has some other local clients here, too. So we try to do monthly or every other month, like, content photo shoots. I love getting to work with local either customers or girls here that can model for us. I've never called a modeling agency and said, hey, I need a model for 8 hours. Like, I've just been scrappy with it. And a lot of times someone will be shopping in my store and I'll be like, oh my gosh, you're gorgeous. Like, are you local? Can you come here? Can we stay in touch? Because we'd love to have you in a Marist Hart image. So we style all of our own shoots and then use that for our content. And I will say, because I'm a millennial, I'm aging myself here a little bit, the whole video aspect of social media now is hard for me to grasp. Like, reels and editing video is not my comfort zone. And when something's not your comfort zone in your business, you hire people that know how to do it. So I love working with 24 and under age girls that know how to edit a video quickly. And, you know, they live on TikTok. I do not live there. I'm still in the Instagram world. And I outsource that when I can.
Yeah, that's a great point. We've certainly pivoted, and now videos are the thing. I think a lot of business owners are struggling with that. So that's great advice to just hire someone if you're not comfortable, and they can really help you out.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit of a micromanager, possibly, but it might be. know your faults, too, in life. But I'm really trying to still hold on to, like, having our brand come across really strong. So it's interesting changing, like, I can style an image and have it look on brand a lot easier than a video and a quick reel, but still having those brand elements in all of our videos too is very important to me as well.
Absolutely. So you mentioned being a micromanager. There are a lot of moving parts here. How do you manage having a life as well and having a husband while also being a business owner?
I will say we're both a little bit workaholics. He is the store manager of M. Dumas & Sons.
Cool.
It's a men's store on King Street. They've been open 100 years, so a totally different business from a new startup business. Yeah. And working our retail hours, I am so lucky since I get perks of being your own boss. You get to make your own schedule, and I match mine to his. So we even carpool to work together.
Aww.
I hate driving. Like, I'm a New York City girl. Like, I would take a subway or a taxi if it existed in Charleston.
Oh, my goodness.
So we, you know, work retail. 11 to 7 is mainly our hours. So you're not rushing home at 5 o'clock for to get dinner on the table and anything like that. And coming to work, starting at 11, I have a full morning, which I love. I'm still trying to become a morning person, but like, I work daily on it. It's a New Year's resolution every year. Consistency is key with things. So, and also you don't have to do everything all at once. So even though I want to become a morning person and I would love to get up every morning and exercise and make a green smoothie and do gratitude every single morning, I do have my healthy practices that I like to do and I enjoy, but I don't put stress on myself to make sure that I have to do it, all of it, every single day. So some mornings I'll make some tea and write in my gratitude journal. Other mornings I'll want to, like, get on the treadmill and read a book while I'm walking. I did have a trainer, a personal trainer at Ethos Gym last year. Loved that. I really need someone there telling me what to do. It's the one time that I do have someone telling me what to do when you are your own boss.
Same way. I agree. I don't like working out by myself at all. Like, tell me what to do. Put me in a class. I'm with you.
And I really enjoy reading. I like to read biographies of women in business, also like in the fashion business. Like I said, DVF had a great book. And then so I'll read, I have like a morning book and then an evening book where they're both like still you're learning from, but the morning one is a little bit more analytical. Since I dropped out of college, I'm still trying to learn things about, I don't have a 4-year business degree and I am in a business, but I'm always
a successful business.
Thank you. I'm always looking to listen to podcasts and read books and just continued learning, I think, is really important.
Good. No, I love that so much. I think I relate a lot to that. And I will say, this is my last question. Thank you so much for your time today. But in terms of advice for other women, you mentioned staying, well, going to New York Fashion Week, finding out what trends are available. How do you stay relevant? And what advice would you give to other women to stay relevant with their businesses?
Within the fashion industry or any business?
Any business. If it's about fashion, I think it could apply to anything.
Yeah. Whatever your business is, I think you need to be fully immersed in your category. So, like, if you're a real estate agent, like, fully live that and, you know, listen to podcasts that other real estate agents do, follow on social media, go to trade shows. So because I am just so passionate about fashion, it really helps me with my business, because it's also just fun for me to learn more. I really look to following people on social media that are in other countries and seeing what they're doing. I really look to the younger Gen Z just to see the micro trends that they're doing as well, because it's a trickle down theory that, like, if they're wearing it 1 year, in 2 years, all age women will want it. Think of Sambas from Adidas.
Yeah.
Like, it started with a few of the cool girls in Brooklyn wearing it with, like, a fun tulle skirt and sneakers. And then now, you know, every woman is wanting a pair of Sambas. So looking to, I'm inspired by younger women and what they're wearing. I'm inspired by other countries and international women, and just always keeping your eyes open. I love traveling to other cities as well, to see what they're wearing on the streets and what they're showing in stores there. New York, Miami, Nashville, places like that. I also am really inspired by seeing what our customers are wearing. Because Charleston being such a destination, and we're in a tourist area, mm-hmm. we will get someone from Chicago in, someone from D.C., someone from Michigan, Boston, like all over. So you get to see the trends and how other women are adapting them mm-hmm. in their other areas. Not just Southern. You know, we're trying to bring a more, an edgier, fun, fashion-forward, trendy mm-hmm. vibe to Charleston. Because sometimes it can be very preppy and classic and Southern. And me being still, I guess, technically a Yankee.
Yeah.
I think that's where, you know, I bring a strength with bringing, you know, my New York fashion edge.
Absolutely. I mean, now that I know you're from New York, I'm like, this makes so much sense now. Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time today. How can we follow you and support you?
Thank you, Kennedy. So you can follow us on Shop Maris DeHart on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And we do have a website, just marisdehart.com. And if you can't make it to Charleston, shop online. But make a trip to Charleston. Come see it in person. This is our only location. And
it's worth it.
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you.
Ready.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed as much as I did, make sure you like, comment, and subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. See you Wednesday for a brand new episode.